Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Today, we'll hear a past interview with Scott Stevens, and we'll hear an excerpt from a past interview with author Rosa Corey, former forensic real estate appraiser and author of the book Behind the Green Mask. Let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. Huge fluoride victory in Wichita. Voters put their foot down and say no to the water supply chemical additive. This is on the Natural News website, J.D. Hayes. Regular readers know that Natural News has been closely watching a situation in Portland, Oregon, where city officials are pushing to add dangerous fluoride to the water. City officials in Portland have done everything they can, openly and behind closed doors, to force residents of both the city and the surrounding area to accept fluoridation, though the citizenry has obviously been getting along just fine without it. A similar battle was being waged much further east in Wichita, Kansas. But the voters there put a stake through the heart of that effort on Election Day voting, and they voted to reject fluoridation of that city's water supply. That's Wichita, Kansas. 59% of voters soundly rejected the initiative, sending a message loud and clear. They aren't prepared to allow city officials to force such a dangerous substance literally down their throats. Despite concerted efforts by pro-fluoridation groups to confuse them, voters similarly rejected a fluoridation effort in 1964. In 1978, local radio station KAKE reported, "Fluoride impedes brain and cognitive development." Supporters said what they always do, that fluoride helps prevent tooth decay, and adding it to the water would save residents' dental costs. While those facts remain highly questionable, the negative effects of fluoride consumption, on the other hand, are well documented. Quote, "The next time somebody tries to tell you that there's no scientific evidence proving that fluoride chemicals are harmful to human health, simply point them to a new study review recently published in the Institute of Environmental Health Sciences Journal, Environmental Health Perspectives, that shows, for something like the 25th time now, that fluoride damages brain development and leads to significantly lower IQ levels in humans." The study review, citing researchers from Harvard and China, noted that there was, quote, "strong indications that exposure to fluoride for young, developing children in particular can lead to improper cognitive and brain development." Quote, "Our results support the possibility of adverse effects of fluoride exposures on children's neurodevelopment," wrote Anna Choi, a research scientist at Harvard, and her colleagues in their report. Quote, "Fluoride readily crosses the placenta. Fluoride exposure to the developing brain, which is much more susceptible to injury caused by intoxicants than the mature brain, may possibly lead to damage of a permanent nature." Paul Connett, PhD, director of the Fluoride Action Network, who's been on the show, he pointed out that dozens of prior studies essentially reached similar conclusions. The authors found a correlation between lowered IQ and fluoride levels in children's blood. This brings us closer to a cause and effect relationship between fluoride exposure and brain damage in children. That's from Dr. Paul Connett. Quote, "What is also striking is that the levels of the fluoride in the community where the lowered IQs were recorded were lower than the EPA's so-called safe drinking water standard for fluoride of 4 parts per million. But none of this hard data mattered much to the fluoride pushers in Wichita. Their pro-fluoride group, Wichitans for Healthy Teeth, tried to compound the issue and muddy the water. Fortunately, however, most voters saw through the smokescreen. Quote, "I push no because it can mess up your teeth." That's Legina Walker, 34 years old. She told the Wichita Eagle, "And I don't trust the water, period." End quote. Here's another story, CBS News. The scientific truth about climate change. And in this story, they talk with a teacher, John Mutter, who teaches environmental science at Columbia University. They're bringing up the issue of superstorms and how they're related to global warming. And here, listen to this. And that brings us to the elephant in the room, Hurricane Sandy, the largest Atlantic hurricane ever recorded. It could cost $50 billion in damage, second only to Hurricane Katrina. Are these superstorms related to global warming? John Mutter, who teaches environmental science at Columbia University, says, there are two questions to address. One is, will there be more storms? And second, will more of those storms be intense? Quote, what's happening is that if the world is warmer overall, the area that's occupied by the tropics will get larger. So if the tropics expand, they'll bring with them their tropical weather, which includes hurricanes. Quote, so imagine that now we have 10 hurricanes per year and two of them are really monsters. In the future, the expectation is there will still be 10, but four of them will be monsters. There will be legitimate scientific agreement and plenty of nasty bickering online about how much climate change we're seeing now. But the really frightening part is what's coming. There will be more extreme weather. Beth Russell, who runs a NOAA exhibit called Science on a Sphere, there will be more extreme weather, she says. That means crop failures, for example. Extreme storms also drive people from their homes. International conflicts would easily result from it. The problem now is us. If we don't unite and try to do something about it, we all bicker until it happens. And they're talking about climate deniers and things like that, and people who don't agree about man-made global warming. If you're a regular listener on this show, you may have heard those discussions in the context of geoengineering and the ongoing aerosol operations and weather manipulation and control. It's real, it's documented, and it has an influence on the bigger picture. The truth is, weather control exists. The truth is, ionospheric heaters exist, meaning there's technology that is being used to heat the atmosphere to alter and manipulate and control the weather. The weather in this country. Yet you still have this counter-narrative going on in the mainstream media. You can almost call them weather control deniers. You can put a label on them, weather control deniers. This level of weather control, as many listeners know, is classified. Therefore, it is not mentioned in mainstream media. So the elephant in the room is weather control. It's not Hurricane Sandy. It's weather control. Now here's the twist. The twist is what Dane Wigington is saying, and that is that the geoengineering, the weather control technology, was used to downgrade the storm because based on the millibar pressure as it came over land, that storm should have been a Category 2 or 3. And Dane Wigington is pointing out it was downgraded but steered into the east coast of the United States. Last week's show went in depth into the technology related to that. We are joined again by Scott Stevens, meteorologist and the creator of the website weatherwars.info. Scott has been involved, as many listeners may know, in many aspects of bringing awareness to these ongoing weather manipulation and control programs across North America and essentially the planet. Scott has interviewed some of the top scientists involved with the fundamental and exotic physics of weather control, and he had analyzed what role electromagnetic properties play in the formation of storms. So it's not only a heat balance equation. There's much more going on the electromagnetic spectrum and beyond. This is investigative work outside the mainstream meteorological knowledge base, and as we've discussed in the past, there are now numerous quasi-private military companies offering services that will force climate change. Scott was a 9-year veteran meteorologist at KPVI-TV in Pocatello, Idaho. And that's where he sort of broke loose. And Scott joins us today. And I just want to say, listeners, we're going to open the lines here for questions right now. So if you have a comment or a question for Scott, maybe based on last week's show,
call us up at 212-209-2950. And Scott, we got a couple of questions last week about your knowledge of Planet X and what role that may have played in, I guess, the Earth changes and disasters and catastrophes we've seen now. A lot of people don't know what Planet X is, or PX, people call it, but essentially maybe an outside gravitic influence on this planet.
Yeah. You know, I don't have any problem with there being a planet out there that's in a 3,600-year highly elliptical orbit. I don't know that it's close enough to the inner solar system yet to cause the influences of some of the things going on around the planet. I think there's lots of energies that are at play here, some directed by the sun, some are man-made, and some come from the Earth herself. It would be difficult to know and to attribute those kind of events to Planet X yet. I know it's there. It's there. And at some point in the skies, the amateur astronomers will spot it, and then it will be everywhere, because I'm sure the professional observatories, you know, have got it well under surveillance. I don't know that it ever was not under surveillance by those powers.
That's fascinating. Go ahead, Scott.
No, I know someone who was briefed on Planet X by one of the observatories and one of the head astronomers in at Kitt Peak, and so they're well aware. They're well aware. You know, this race of beings never left the planet, so you know there's not so much hiding it. It's just about letting humanity evolve without the direct influence of them. You know, it's about us, not about them.
That's fascinating. Solar flares are the other aspect here that some listeners had written in and wanted to ask you about as well. And if you could comment on your knowledge of that. It seems very fleeting and ephemeral. How can you know when that's going to happen?
You know, I don't know that you can. I know that there's a lot of prophecy, and that's other people's work, about what the sun would do, you know, come 2012. Patrick Jarrell has been very interesting in his research and in his book in particular, The Orion Prophecy. And he goes very into old codex, Egyptian work and books and stelas and then melds that into Mayan knowledge of calendars, and it opens up to understanding that the sun has a differential in its rotation, that the equator of the sun has a different rotation than the polar regions of the sun, and that's by 11 days. And these cycles, solar cycles, you know, wind and unwind, but yet there's super cycles superimposed upon this 11/22-year cycle, and that's something on the order of 26,000-27,000 years in length. And Patrick Jarrell's work is that many of these calendars come to a zero point when the sun does what the sun does every, you know, 26,000 years. So, you know, there's something to that. But that's not really my field. And the flares are going to be interesting to watch. You know, NASA's made us very aware that they're concerned.
The other aspect I forgot to mention is the listener mentioned he thinks that the aerosol programs are also covering up an approaching planetoid into, you know, making it visible.
Right. I think that would be too great a challenge. I really do, because an astronomer right now is going to need infrared gear, and he's going to need to be into a high valley where there isn't a lot of moisture. And they're not going to have an idea when to have enough aerosols in the atmosphere to block when he may choose to look at or search for, you know, this near-infrared object. So I think that's silly.
I thought about that actually, and it was very challenging to even start to imagine the planetary mechanics and where we are in terms of an orbiting planetoid and the sun and how they would even try to do that.
Yeah. And I almost wonder if there isn't that this planet isn't under some kind of intelligent control, because if this race of beings is so advanced, then maybe they're capable of determining the orbit of their planet. You know, I suppose that's within the realm of possibility if you really want to go out there.
Well, the listeners did want to go out there last week. I'm not sure if that's the case this evening. We don't know. I just want to remind listeners, if you have a question or comment for Scott Stevens, you can call us at 212-209-2900. And do we have a call next? We have one call. Well, we'll give it a shot. Hi, you're on the air with Scott Stevens. Go ahead, caller.
Good evening. My name is Nick. I live in Seacliff. I'm retired law enforcement. How are you?
Great.
Good, Nick.
I tell you why I'm calling. If I could just digress for one moment.
Sure.
on an issue that you brought up in the beginning of the program, and that has to do with not only Codex, which is something that scares me, being a cancer survivor, that I won't be able to use a vitamin or a supplement or an herb because our good government is going to make sure they protect us. I said that, of course, tongue-in-cheek. The other thing is the Senate Bill 1867. Having been at 9/11 and also the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, I had a double dose of the Trade Center. This bill that's pending is frightening to me, and I'm fighting for my grandchildren because if it ever comes to fruition, we are in for some rude awakening. People have to wake up. I'm not an alarmist by any means. Police are afraid. Okay, and I happen to be with the police union. I'm a retiree delegate with the police and in New York.
Yeah.
So if we're afraid of this bill, 1867, what's going to happen when it comes to fruition that people are going to dial the phone for the cops and there's not going to be any cops because those police are going to be protecting their own families?
Yep. Yep, yep.
See, so this is real. So put down the iPods, the iPhones, the football games, and all the other, you know, illusionary things that divert people from what's really happening. And wake up. Wake up.
Right. It's not so much of censoring our conscious awareness and our ability to perceive what's going on around us, but your caller, you're also pointing out that it's a level of genocide as well.
Oh, I mean, think about this. What better way to control the Occupy Wall Street people by interring them? This can happen. This is a reality. I mean, look, I did 27 years in police work in law enforcement, and I don't scare easy. But when I look and I read, especially knowing where it's coming from the two individuals from the Senate, not even mentioning their names, it alarms me that an arched liberal and an arched conservative, or quasi-conservative.
yeah, Lennon and McCain.
He changes his political affiliations all the time. But these folks are sponsoring this bill. This is why I'm a progressive and always have been.
Yep.
I don't identify with the Republican or the Democratic Party. I'm sorry, the lines have blurred. I can't tell them apart.
No, and that's what we're missing in this country is a third voice, a sane voice.
That's right.
And what we need is a bloody vision that is inclusive for every single one of us.
Right.
And I think a big part of what has to happen is we have to quit exporting our wealth overseas.
Correct.
We have got to begin to wean China off of our dollars, and we've got to wean ourselves off of Chinese stuff. And as soon as those pipelines to China and the Far East begin to wither, then that money's reflected back on this country.
Correct.
And we'll see an opportunity. We'll see, you know, an economic revitalization. Because we're pretty special. I mean, granted, America's a pretty special place.
Absolutely.
And we can be that way again. But it's going to take some leadership, and that is what has been sorely missing on so many levels for so many administrations. We need leadership with a vision for America, not to placate the lobbyists for the Democrats, the Republicans.
That's correct. This is close to 100 years in the making where we are right now.
Every bit of it. Every bit of it.
I come from a family who served in four of the major U.S. wars.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us who didn't go into the service went into police, FBI, customs. And I ask myself this question, why and for what?
Yeah, I know, exactly.
God's name did I do?
why did I support the system?
But now we're coming to a point where we have to worry about not only smart meters, being bombarded with this energy type weaponry. Yep. My God, this is absolute. This is Orwell, Huxley, all wrapped up in one.
Yep.
It's all here.
And they're waiting for us to wake up.
The thing about 1984 and Orwell is they knew that they were being surveilled.
That's correct.
And so the difference now is people really don't understand that they're under high surveillance, especially if they had a smart meter or lived in a, what they're talking about in that update, smart city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah. By the way, just so you know, down at Occupy Wall Street, down by Zuccotti Park.
Right.
You know there's surveillance cameras there, right?
Yes.
Also know that there are sophisticated listening devices that are capable of picking up a conversation 90 feet away, crystal clear, digitally recorded.
You know it. You know it.
So now you got. Now we have the thought police. Now you can't even, you know, you can't even speak on the streets.
They could probably isolate an individual immediately and know their background within seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Down there, I was walking one day. I slowed down, and over a microphone, I heard, "Keep moving." And I turned around, and I looked at the camera, and I smiled.
Are you serious? They were that blatant.
Someone to get into my face. Oh, I would have loved it. I would have cherished the moment.
So what do you think when it comes down to down to the time when it's decision time for these the law enforcement of the Army? Will they follow orders, or will they be human?
Well, I hope they're going to be human because, don't forget, their families have just as much to lose. They themselves have just as much to lose.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I volunteer at the station. I'm a benefactor to the station. I believe in WBAI. I have for many, many, many years. I'm 58 years old. But getting back to that question, if they're smart and if they could really see the bigger picture, then they're going to turn against the government. And this is what's ultimately going to happen here.
Well, that's the only way it'll happen is they get to see the bigger picture rather than just individual isolated pieces, and they don't see and understand the common thread.
Right. Look, there's a lot of intelligent people in the police department. I can tell you right now,
mm-hmm.
They had a fine line to have to deal with. On the one hand, they had to allow people to protest, right, under the First Amendment,
right,
peaceful assembly, and on the other hand, they also had to follow the orders of the people above them, and I questioned the leadership, quite frankly. All right? Now, especially out in Oakland, California, when you shoot a tear gas canister and you hit a two-term Iraq war veteran in the head, Mr. Olson, and leave him almost dead, I said to myself, where's the judgment here? I actually called that department. I dressed them down. I said, you're a bunch of amateurs. You got to be kidding me.
Where's the humanity?
I mean, you have to be joking. What if this was your son or your daughter that was hit? Or at Davis, where those young kids were pepper sprayed, I didn't see anybody get violent to those cops.
Well, the day that the cops join the protest is the day that I'm waiting for. That'll be a day.
I said to them, I said, you're a member of a... How come you're not part of the 99%?
Duty.
Really?
Loyalty.
You're a union member. Are you part of the one? Or are you representing the 1%?
I'm paid by the 1%, which is paid by the 99%.
Exactly. I said, wake up, fellas.
Yeah.
The young cops, wake up. Anyway, my thoughts.
Caller, I really appreciate that, and I hope to see you around the station, actually.
Yeah, you will. I'll be down shortly. I'm going to be on Earl Caldwell's program, I think, next Friday or the Friday after.
Oh, fantastic. I really appreciate your insights.
Yeah, I'll email you, and... just put your email address over the air so I can write it down, please.
Absolutely will do. Thank you, caller.
Thank you very much. Have a blessed new year.
Take care.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And go ahead, caller.
Yes, I'd like to know what you suggest that we do about warning people about climate change, especially with the upcoming winter that's going to be so warm, and I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thank
you. Go ahead, Scott.
You know, the warmth is a blessing and a curse, because where it's warm is probably going to be the Rockies and the Central Plains, and that's where it's been so dry. So that isn't necessarily a good thing, because usually once the winter's dry, it doesn't usually change in the spring. But back east, you know, it's been wet. There's these kind of seasons, there tend to be lots of Arctic incursions, and you just kind of have to prep for the cold. But, you know, La Nina wants to come back. It wants to come back. And if that's the case, then it's going to be decidedly cold in the Northeast. And that's expensive. That's expensive. So, and you guys were, yeah, you didn't get any snow for the winter or for Christmas, did you?
No, very stark difference from last year at this time. We were, I guess, under, I don't know, 7 inches, 8 inches or whatever of snow. And up north got really hammered. But no, it's, you know, it's not too bad out there, actually, Scott. We're lucky. I feel kind of lucky about this.
Exactly. And the days are starting to get longer now, so I'm good with that, too.
I just want to say to the previous caller, the email address to reach us is inothernewsradio@yahoo.com. And if you want, you have a question or comment for Scott Stevens, call us at 212-209-2900, and we'll put you on the air with Scott Stevens. If you have a question about anything regarding climate change, global warming, and remind listeners your perception of global warming and climate change. And I know it's extremely controversial, especially with some of the listenership here, because they're very, you know, there's an emotional connection with some of it, which I understand.
Right, right. Well,
go ahead, Scott.
And I get that. You know, this is a beautiful, beautiful planet. You know, it is a Garden of Eden. It's a gorgeous place. And we have to respect that she's also alive and that she, like us, tends to move and wiggle and adjust and grow and you know, go through cycles. And so we have to not confuse an increase of CO2 and superimposing across, you know, a change in temperature over time, which, you know, is of dubious value because of what's happened with the weather systems and weather reporting. You know, since they automated everything back in the late 80s, we just don't have reliable data anymore. Too many stations have been installed, you know, near pavement and ends of runways and air conditioning vents and on tops of buildings. And there's just not a lot of clean data anymore. And that really seems to be by design.
I wonder the other aspect of the unclean data is the ongoing, artificially generated weather manipulation through aerosol spraying.
Well, and aerosol spraying changes the energy budget of the planet. That's kind of a given. The ratio of high clouds to, say, low clouds over the last 30 years is that there's the high clouds has doubled in percentage, and that keeps sunshine from reaching the ground and photosynthesis and you know, natural processes that would otherwise happen under 100% sunshine now has to do with 85% sunshine and specific frequencies, you know, blotted out by the aluminum, barium, strontium, and other metals that are up there.
And listeners are very familiar with that if they've been listening to the show in this last year. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good evening. How you doing?
Good evening.
Two questions for the guest, but basically just quickly about the smart meters. I work. My name is Ed, calling from Jamaica, by the way.
Welcome, Ed.
How you doing? I work with in the building maintenance field. You can refuse the smart meters. They are in New York City right now. They're trying to put them in commercial buildings, and they're working on residential. You can refuse them. It's a lengthy process, but you got to go on. You got to go on the web and look up in National Grid and search through that website, and there's a way to refuse the smart meters if you're afraid of the EMF. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. You got to subscribe to Trade Magazine because the smart meter technology is just the beginning. There's going to be chips and appliances that will be able to monitor and regulate power, be able to shut them off, cycle them back with air conditionings and refrigerators and electrical heating systems. There's a whole plan, a whole network. It's in a lot of the trade magazines that talk about it, but I tell people all the time, subscribe to the trade magazine, especially online, because you can find out what's really going on, because a lot of it is technical and people in my field have to know how to install it. So, but there's a big plan coming with that down
or repair them as well. Could you give us a name of a trade magazine, maybe?
Well, there's one called Quantum Energy. It comes out of Sweden, and I get that one.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about the companies involved with the production of the smart grid. It's going to be not only a smart city, it's going to be a smart nation. You're going to have devices in your home that you're not even going to know about. A lot of them are being sold now, especially in air conditioning, because due to the nature of air conditioning, it's easy to control the cycles and RPMs of electric motors with variable speed, and they'll cut back. I've dealt with systems that actually are programmed to cut back on cooling when there's a when they notice that the customer's overrunning a certain amount, and customers aren't aware of it, and they'll call and they'll say we're not getting enough cooling or what's going on, and I'll have to explain it to them, and they don't even know about it.
Wow, that's really fascinating. I'm glad you brought that up. So you can refuse in New York right now.
You can refuse, but it's a lengthy process. And first of all, you got to know they're installing it, and they look a certain way, and they're not real forthcoming with it. You got to dig.
You got to dig. That's on the National Grid website. You can dig for
that. Yeah, you can dig for that. There's other websites. If you Google smart meters, some of them will come up. I don't know. I don't have the papers in front of me right now. But I had a question for your guest. From last week, I was looking into some of his work, and you deny global warming. I mean, I really don't understand. I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying and a lot of the things that were on your website and in your work, but how can you deny that? I mean, there's enough credible science out there to stipulate the fact from enough credible scientists that something is happening to this climate and that man might be responsible.
Well, and that's exactly what I'm saying. Man is responsible for everything that's happening in this climate, but it isn't because of global warming. Climate varies.
I understand what you're saying. I understand about the theory about sudden, drastic climactic change, but that's a theory. I mean, isn't it better to err on the side of caution? There's nothing wrong with stuff. I work with Freon. I know what Freon can do to your body. There's nothing wrong with erring on the side of caution.
Exactly. And I have no problem not using the atmosphere as a toilet.
Yes.
And I think that should be the reason we do it, not because of CO2.
Well, whatever the reason.
Well, you know, hold on. Go ahead, Scott.
Because there is a difference. They want to tax us for emitting CO2 into the atmosphere, but without giving us the technology to keep us from emitting CO2. They will not open the secrets to free energy. They will not open the secrets to over-unity devices. They will not open the secrets to water fusion. They will not. And that's my issue. We have these solutions. So don't bloody tax us on something you're already charging us too much for, which is the oil and petrochemicals.
Which leads to a stable, impoverished playing field. But go ahead, caller.
I understand what you're saying, but you got to start somewhere. And I mean the emissions, the Freon emissions, the Halon emissions. The Kyoto Protocol was a good thing. You understand what I'm saying? I see where you're coming from.
Right.
I'm aware of over-unity devices. I'm aware of free energy. I've actually, when I was in the military, I think I've said it on this show.
Why do we want to go for a first down when we can score a touchdown?
Yeah, but you got to work in
the end. No, we have got to focus on the end. And the end is ending the secrecy. And when we can end the secrecy, we can fix everything. We have free energy for everybody. We don't spend a dime in fuel going from here to Tokyo. It's done.
Yeah, but right now
it's accomplished.
But right now you got Montserrat, the home of my grandmother where she came from, that's sinking into the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? What are you going to do to stop?
Well, how do you know that's the ocean rising versus the island sinking? I'm serious, because the crust of this planet is not stable in the oceans.
I understand, but whatever it is, we got to do something to stop it.
See, well, it's uncertain. It's uncertain. Is that what you're saying, Scott?
What I did was I moved to a location, and I'm 8,100 feet in southern Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
Yeah, but you can't move a whole island, island full of over 100,000 people.
No, you can't. But some will get the high ground.
Wow, man. It's kind of cold, don't you think?
No, this is not going to be a 100-year cycle. It will be a pulse.
Well, how do you know?
Because that's how it's always happened. That's how it's always happened. That's how change happens.
But you don't know that that's happening. You don't know that this is sudden climactic change. You don't know.
It's not going to be sudden climate. It won't be the atmosphere that changes. It'll be something external that hits the Earth that changes it. It'll be a pulse from the sun. It's the sun. It's the sun that controls it. The sun unwinds every so many years, and that's an energetic pulse.
I understand what you're saying. I understand the principle of the solar cycle and sunspots, but all I'm saying is that I'd rather err on the side of caution because lives are involved than to hope that the government releases some secret energy technology that they probably would never release if they have perfected it to the degree that you believe they have.
I would just take care of the atmosphere because we all breathe it.
Anything that's going to help the atmosphere, I think, is a plus.
I agree.
Not a minus.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
And are you aware of any activity as it's going on specifically in southeast New York as far as with aerosol spraying? Because because there's been quite a bit of activity in the past 2 weeks. I monitored it myself with, well, there's two specific types of trails. Mm-hmm. One is a single plane that's approximately at least 15,000, 20,000 feet that sprays a single jet on an elliptical arc.
Okay.
That doesn't dissipate, that basically turns into a cloud.
Yeah. Yep.
And then there are three planes, one plane spraying, and the other two appear to be low, even though it's hard to tell from that height.
It is.
They're not spraying anything, but they bisect the line.
They do.
And parts of the line seem to dissipate, and parts seem to stay the same. This has been going on and off every other day approximately for the past about week.
And it's the bisecting of that line or that segment of that trail that exists that tells you that that second plane is interested in whatever is the reason why that segment of the trail is fluorescing, why it's still bright, why didn't it fade away? And that's my question. Why does it matter to them? Why is it worth spending the money to leave these aerosols up there and then investigate them with further flights?
Well, I know the other, the one that concerns me is the one that doesn't dissipate, because I've watched it, and over an hour period, it turns into a cloud. It turns into like one of those thin, I believe it's called cumulus nimbus.
Ed, I want to just jump in here for a sec. Watch this carefully, because you may see that cloud open up into a larger cloud and then drift over the sun. And they call that, what do they call that, SRM, Scott, solar radiation management?
Well, they could. Well, it's wherever the planet, the trail is, it's going to be in front of the sun somewhere.
Well, I noticed that there is some deliberate activity that goes in front of the sun, and temperatures cool down and the winds pick up. But Ed noticed that, because I've noticed that pattern as well.
Well, actually, not to cut you off, but I'm going to say, because I know people want to get on, but actually the cloud, actually this one at one time, and I thought I was bugging out, but I checked it. The cloud went a different direction than the regular clouds that were in the sky.
Wow. Yep.
And that was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
The
clouds were moving one direction. That cloud was moving exactly opposite direction.
And I've watched even trails, move through a cloud. It's like something is dragging it across the cloud.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre.
It
means they're attached to some kind of resonance or some kind of field. Mm. And that's what they're there is, marking and illuminating the edge of that field. Crazy.
Ed, I want to really just say I appreciate your observations here and your listening to the show and your paying attention. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. It's a good show. I like it.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ed.
That was a past show with guest, former meteorologist Scott Stevens. We go now to hear an excerpt from the interview with Rosa Corey, former forensic real estate appraiser, and author of the book, Behind the Green Mask. Let's have a listen. The United Nations agenda for the 21st century is a global plan that is creeping into regions of the United States and North America. This is all being done under the guise of environmentalism, and the groundwork has already been laid down here in New York City. The use of buzzwords are important. Remember those words we talked about in April? The ones that leave you with that positive, it must be okay feeling. Words like smart, livable, walkable, vibrant, bikeable, consensus, community, sustainable, carbon footprint, green. Yet across the country, individuals are losing their rights to private property, land and water, as cities are replanned for high-density urban development and smart growth. We talk again about the tentacles of ICLEI, the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives, which is tasked with carrying out the goals of the UN Agenda 21 locally and using taxpayer money. You see, what people are taking notice of is how millions in taxpayer revenue is being used to fund these plans. People are fighting back, says our guest Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, but it's not easy. Rosa talks from experience. She's a forensic commercial real estate appraiser and has gone through massive battles with neighborhood groups, lawsuits against the city of Santa Rosa in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she's been traveling around the country sharing her story. Rosa asks if we will be living in smart growth slums, traveling on buses routed only where we're permitted to go, and will you be restricted to working in transit villages? It's a powerful book that really does expose what's behind the mask and shows what you can do to fight back.
Rosa Corey is the executive director of the Post Sustainability Institute, where she studies the impacts of Agenda 21 sustainable development, and she runs the website Democrats Against UN Agenda 21. Rosa, welcome to Another News. Well, it's great to have you here. Now, can you give listeners a little bit of a background on what UN Agenda 21 is and how it got into the U.S.?
Sure. The thing about Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, is that it's a blueprint. It is the action plan to inventory and control all water, all land, all minerals, all plants, all animals, all energy, all means of production, all information, and all human beings in the world. It is an inventory and control plan. And, of course, everyone knows that it was it's a real thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's not Area 51 or Catch-22. It was signed on to by George H.W. Bush, along with 178 other national leaders around the world in 1992 at the United Nations Earth Summit. And it is a it's a soft law. And it came into the United States. Of course, it was Clinton created the President's Council on Sustainable Development later when he was elected in late 92 and then came into office in 93. Mm-hmm. By June of 93, he had created the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and that was solely purposed with implementing United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, in the United States. And it's not that it's filtering in to your city or your county or your, you know, your state right now. It is fully entrenched all across the United States right now.
That's what I wanted to ask you also is, for somebody living in a small town, what does Agenda 21 look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll see it in many different ways. You'll see it as a scenic byway, for instance. You'll see it as your town 2025, our city, our vision, our future. You'll see it as a land use plan. You'll see it as a general plan. Your master plan is changing. You'll see it as smart growth, transportation tax dollars, and property tax dollars used to supplement high-density housing in the center of your city. You'll see areas of your city rezoned to mixed use or transit village without your knowledge. If you own property in those areas and you go to do something with your property, you'll find that you aren't able to do what you thought you could with it. It's not what it was zoned for before. In fact, the use has changed. And this is something, it's a stealth plan, but it operates in plain sight. And it definitely depends on people not being aware that it's happening. But those days are over, and we are definitely aware, and we're doing everything we can to stop it.
I wondered about that, and you have quite a fascinating story of how you became aware of the United Nations Agenda 21 in your book, Behind the Green Mask. And our guest is Rosa Corey. Rosa, can you tell listeners how you became aware of this?
Yeah, well, first I want to say, you know, a lot of times people hear about this, they're either they're thinking that, you know, it's kind of a conservative, maybe a right-wing thing. It's not. It's a nonpartisan issue. I am a Democrat and have been since 1974. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser. I was a district branch chief for the Department of Transportation in California for 30 years, and I'm an expert witness, litigation support person. So, of course, my work involves land use and land value. And besides that, personally, I've been a political activist, active in gay rights, pro-choice, anti-war. And during that time that I was, being kind of made aware of something happening in land use, it seemed like there was a planning revolution going on. Because when I went into planning departments to find out what people could do with their properties so I could value it, it looked like there wasn't really anything that people could do by right, and that was over the last 10 years. And during that period, I was elected to a Citizens Oversight Committee for a project area committee for a huge redevelopment project in my town. And when I became involved with, you know, sitting on that committee, I found that it was a fraudulent project. It was corrupt. And being, you know, as a whistleblower, I was marginalized, attacked, unbelievable, you know, kind of people coming out of the woodwork to malign and try to embarrass me, try to get me to lose my job. And what the thing that shocked me mainly about it was that these were people that I would have expected to make common cause with, people that I thought would have been my allies. So
sorry to laugh, but it is such a story, listeners, in her book, Behind the Green Mask. It's really told in detail, and Rosa Corey, our guest here, is just summarizing the story. And I wanted to just even plug in for a second that the did you find out even then where the money was coming from to fund this redevelopment plan?
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing because redevelopment, and in some areas it's called urban renewal, but it is it's used, they use your property tax dollars to fund smart growth. And smart growth is the preferred development style for United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. And it's not just a development style, it's actually an ideology. And when I started, you know, when I looked at who was attacking me, and it was so interesting because it was environmental groups, people on the left like myself, Democratic groups, unions. And when I was, you know, so I put all of that together, and then when I did my research, I found that there was something behind it, and that was United Nations Agenda 21 Sustainable Development.
And there are articles out there that talk about how people are overreacting and they are making it a partisan issue. There was an article talking about people resisting Agenda 21 a few months ago, and in it a community development manager from Oklahoma was quoted as saying, "I can understand how people in some cases may be fearful of government, but where it loses steam is they give cities and government a little too much credit. We certainly don't have the money or political will to hurt or harm or take private property."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lie, actually. And you're going to see a lot of that because this, you know, this is what it looks like in your town. It's primarily a land use plan. And it has been backed and pushed and funded by the American Planning Association. And the American Planning Association just put out a 12-week-long boot camp for planners to re-educate them in how to deal with people like me who are telling the truth about what's going on. And so it sounds to me like this person has attended that 12-week-long boot camp where they were told to inoculate elected officials, to push the concept that planning is essential for economic recovery and jobs, and to say that anyone who would point out that this is all related to basically a corporatocracy totalitarian takeover is, you know, is sort of a tinfoil hat. And, you know, the fact that, I mean, I've been accused of having a, you know, fundamental fear of government, which is ridiculous considering I spent my entire career working for a government agency. So I think that, you know, when you're talking about a disinformation campaign, a propaganda campaign, you'll find that they'll just pull out all the stops to attack individuals rather than deal with the issues. And that's something that we need to point out and stop.
It's really easy to do. The systems are in place. The people are paid off, as you pointed out in your book, to do that. And there's something called the Delphi technique that's used in the types of meetings that pull people together. But that means the Delphi technique means the meeting has already been really – the outcome of the meeting has been pre-approved. But they're really they just want to see who the people are that's involved. They want to take the data and a lot more. Can you describe what that is and how people can understand the depth of manipulation here?
Sure. And this is, you know, this is just so fascinating because the way this works, you know, is a land use plan. Often you'll see it, you know, it's something happening in your town. You're invited to come on down and give your opinion on vision, your town, you know, on your town 2025 or whatever it is. And it's always, you know, going to be a smart growth plan, which is high density development in the center of your city, subsidized with your tax dollars. And you'll be invited to come on down and give your opinion. And really, you know, these plans are dependent on the illusion of community buy-in, because the concern is that when the citizenry wakes up and recognizes how manipulated they're being, that they're going to get angry, which is exactly right. And so what they want to do, what your government is doing, is manipulating you so that they can say that this is your plan. And so what they're using is a RAND Corporation mind control technique from the Cold War era, and it's called the Delphi technique.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it's something that they teach facilitators, meeting managers in college and in schools. You can be trained in this, right? And what it is it's it's the new consensus, which is neutralization of the opposition. And it's a way of bringing people in to, to solicit their opinion, supposedly. But they're given the illusion of having an influence on the plan that has already been fully determined and laid out before they walked in the room. And while they are giving their opinion, they are being given the illusion that they are having an influence on it and that it is their plan. So it's giving people this sense that, yes, they're developing the plan and their point of view is being heard. But in fact, it is not. And this is happening all across the United States. You'll see it when you walk into a government plan meeting, and you'll see those little tables where you're supposed to have your crayons and your gold stars and, you know, color on someone else's property your vision of what you'd like to see there.
Oh,
and this is really a plan to take away private property rights. And, you know, I want to remind people that we are our own private property. Our most important private property is our bodies. And this is a plan that actually takes away your personal sovereignty and the sovereignty of our country. And, you know, I'm telling you, I'm a liberal Democrat. And this is, you know, this is an issue for Democrats as well. We own property. We have, you know, our intellectual property, our bodies. And when you're looking at issues like smart meters, and which is part of Agenda 21 Sustainable Development,
mm-hmm.
you're looking at the 1%. This is a corporatocracy takeover, a corporate takeover, global governance.
Mm-hmm.
Food independence, that's another thing that you're going to see. This is part of it, to create total dependence on government. Banks, bank manipulations, this is a bank plan. This is a plan to sink your economy and create total poverty in the United States. What's unsustainable? Single-family residences, vehicles, private vehicles, air conditioning, appliances.
Air conditioning?
Yes.
Not on days like this. Oh, my
mm-hmm.
God.
That's right. Air conditioning and dams, reservoirs. So when you're looking at things like that, you're talking about something that is, you know, basically our affluent middle-class lifestyle is considered unsustainable. And you're given this, you know, you're being told a lot of people live in urban areas. The more people who live in urban areas, the less people there are who know how much land there is in the United States. We are an agricultural country. There's a tremendous amount of open land in the U.S. And we are being, you know, those of us who are in cities are being indoctrinated and propagandized with this story that we're destroying and using up nature. And this is simply not true.
It's another carefully crafted lie to and using environmentalism, you know, I mean, that is so insidious to use that as a control mechanism. And, you know, I had a very difficult conversation with an old friend who I think is getting paid by the UN right now, and because he had a really an about-face viewpoint on Agenda 21. And he told me I was a right-wing conspiracist and, you know, used all of that. I was like, I was really shocked at his response. And he was talking to me in a very calm, evenly toned voice and using words that you would only see in an abstract before a report. And he told me that opposition to UN Agenda 21 was funded by the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if that's even true?
Well, you know, I have, of course, I've been accused of that myself. I've had people, look me right in the eye and say, you're being paid by the Koch brothers. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I don't know anyone who is. I guess anything's possible, but I am being invited all across the United States. I spoke at the California Libertarian Convention. I've spoken to many different political groups, to universities, to Tea Party groups, to 9/12 groups, Campaign for Liberty groups, independent property rights groups all across the U.S. And as far as I know, no one that I know of has ever indicated that they had any big source of funding, at all.
Well, so, doesn't it come from the Tea Party supporting the opposition to UN Agenda 21? Is that where some of it's coming from, that the concept?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, my thing is that I'll go anywhere that anyone invites me to speak. And it's like I was saying, I'm gay and married to my partner of 20 years. And certainly when I go and speak in groups, there are probably going to be issues that we're not going to agree on. And I don't care. Because this is an American issue. This is a nonpartisan issue. And I personally am willing to lay aside those issues because this is so much more important. Now, as far as who may be funding groups that are bringing me, I really have never had any indication that there are large financial backers behind anyone who has brought me to speak anywhere.
That was an excerpt from the interview with Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask. You've been listening to In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. See you next Monday, 10 p.m.